This is SermonSmith. My name is John Chandler, and this is a bi-weekly conversation about the craft of sermon preparation. I mentioned it a few times, but we are back to a bi-weekly format. I'm just not at a stage of life yet where I'm going to be able to continue the weekly, and I want to be consistent with whatever I do. So we experimented with the weekly in January and didn't even make it. So I'm moving ahead with the bi-weekly format, which you'll see even a little bit more comes into play here as I tell you about today's episode. Before we move on to that, I want to let you know about today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is Dadox Films, once again, DEIDOX.com. Dadox Films are short-form narratives about people who are living out faith in their unique context. I want to tell you today, actually, about one that I was watching, a film called Robert. Each of the films is named after the subject of it. And a film called Robert, and the reason I think it's interesting right now is because it's about someone who gave up his job as an ER doctor to start a clinic. And right in the middle of it, he talks about and relates his experience to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and talks about, you know, the wisdom of the cross and just how it appears foolish, and relates that to the choices that he's made. And it rung out to me because as I've been looking at the lectionary texts for Lent, or even as you're anticipating talking about the cross with Easter approaching and Good Friday approaching, it just seemed like a great film that might be useful in this time of year. So take a look at Dadox Films. I think they're great complements to your upcoming sermons, and that one in particular might be one worth watching. That's Robert. It's on Dadox, DEIDOX.com. I thank them for being sponsors for the podcast and getting behind what we're doing here. So today's episode is actually a little unique because, as I alluded to, had a little bit of a challenge. I had two different interviews that were scheduled that were due to come out, and then both of them had different conflicts that came up. And then I realized, you know, I've had a couple people reach out to me and say, hey, who said, why don't you tell us a little bit about your sermon process? And I thought, well, maybe this is a good time to do that. I reached out to my good friend Shane Blackshear, who is the host of Seminary Dropout. Shane is also here in Austin, and so he and I set up a time and actually went over to his place and turned the tables, and he became the host. So we have a guest host, Shane Blackshear, and then I became the guest. So the guest became the host, and the host became the guest. But I do encourage you, you know, I gave him a little bit of time to talk about it at the end. Check out Shane's podcast, Seminary Dropout. You can find it, you know, if you just do a search in iTunes, or you can find it on his website, shaneblackshear.com. I think he's also got seminarydropout.com, both pointing to it. Shane's a great guy. It was a pleasure to just sit down and chat with him, but I'm thankful that he was willing to do this really on pretty short notice. So let's move on to today's podcast with me. Feel like you have what you need?
I think so.
All right.
This
is weird.
Are you gonna start?
This
it?
Is weird.
It is weird.
I'm not used to like sitting across from somebody. There's not even like there's not even like a table between us.
No, yeah. It's no holds barred. This is like the octagon.
So we're sitting in Seminary Dropout World Headquarters.
also my bedroom.
Also, right. the bedroom of Shane and his lovely wife, Kate. As I already said in the intro, this is going to be a little bit different format because our guest today is the host rather than the guest. And I'm the guest, even though I'm normally the host. Mm-hmm. So heads are spinning, which is better than heads are rolling. But I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Shane Black. I haven't even said your name yet, but I said that in the intro, right? Right.
But you really haven't recorded yet, but you will have.
Know that I haven't recorded it yet, but yes, this is
true.
Shane, as I will say in the intro that you already heard, is a good friend. And I thought what a fun switcheroo, since Shane's way more skilled at I am than asking questions.
Not true.
Even though I told him what questions to ask mostly.
Yeah.
So,
well, first, thanks for letting me do this. It's an honor to be here and to, you know, for you to trust me with your platform and your audience here. And so I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to put on my best John Chandler impression for SermonSmith and asking questions. My printer's making weird noises right now. We're like looking around the room. Okay, it's real life. Okay, so let's start with the first question you ask most people, which is, tell us about the context where you preach, what's the story of your church, and what kind of people are a part of it?
Yeah. So we're in Austin, Texas. That's where we are right now, in fact.
Literally, right now.
Our church is Austin Mustard Seed, and it's a new young church. We started having a weekly liturgy in October of 2013, which you've preached in our liturgy, and you've certainly attended a few times.
True.
So you know what it's
like. So I'm very
aware.
For
everyone else's sake, yeah. We are blessed, at least for a few more weeks, that we get to meet in another church's building. And so that's just really made it a pretty low-key setup for us. So that building is for sale, and we're about out of it and on the hunt right now for where we're going to be meeting next. Mustard Seed is a community. It's mostly, I'm 43 years old, and it's not too uncommon for me to be the oldest person there on a Sunday. Most of the people who are part of Mustard Seed are between the ages of probably 25 to 35. A lot of young couples, a lot of young singles, a lot of young families. The mixture of our church is probably people, I would say that the best breakdown I would say is it's probably about two-thirds people who found Mustard Seed because they were new to Austin or just in a season of looking for a new church. So it was a very intentional, they came with a pretty inhabited faith. Mm-hmm. And then we, man, probably about a third of our people, for whatever reason, even as I say this, I can see faces flashing by, are people who found their way to Mustard Seed after a season off. There's not very many people in Austin. There are, but I don't run across many people in Austin who have no faith background whatsoever. I find a lot of people who are chucked their faith at some point, you know, high school, yeah, college, as you would know. And for some reason, we've had a clump of people who come in ready to try again, or still even not even sure, like still questioning, but they found it to be a safe environment, which is fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
So I preach probably about, I guess I probably preach about a little over 50% of the time, maybe about two-thirds of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We have another pastor on staff who preaches about once a month, and then we actually try to work in a number of voices from within the congregation as well. And I should say relevant to all this is I'm bivocational. So
yeah,
I work for the church about 3 days a week, and then I do... this is part of my bivocation, which is we just, you know, had our first sponsors recently, pretty excited about that. But my primary bivocation, I was going to say unvocation, but that wouldn't be true. my primary other job is I do freelance web development on websites, mostly for some companies here in Austin, but other things as well. So about, I spend most of my mornings doing Mustard Seed stuff, a couple afternoons a week, but most of my afternoons are staring at code.
Yeah.
Which is just like sermon prep.
Wow. Okay.
In no ways at all.
Is that challenging being bivocational?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How so?
So we moved to Austin 7 years ago intending to be bivocational and because it would allow us to really develop relationships here. But one of the things I started realizing in any season was what I realized was the shower test, which was, what is it, you know, my energy at a certain time is what am I thinking about when I'm in the shower, mm-hmm, in the morning? And
yeah.
So there was, especially because I really kind of started the freelance business and started developing groundwork for the church at the same time, it was hard to have split energies. I would say it's easier now than it was then. Part of that's because this year I have been able to go up to, you know, more than half of my time being for the church. So I'm able to give more energy to that. But yeah, I mean, it definitely requires me to have some degree of intention in how I break down my time, especially when you're talking about sermon prep, which we're talking about sermon prep.
Right.
You know, to try to make the most of the time that I am able to give to it. But I'm lucky, you know, the bivocation I have is very
flexible.
It's flexible. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not rigid. I don't, in some ways that's good and bad because I suppose if I worked at a coffee shop, I punch in and punch out, but it's also nice to be able to arrange my schedule, you know, however it works best for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So tell us about a little bit about how you see preaching, what role that fills in the life of the congregation of your church.
Yeah. These are good questions.
Aren't they? They're so good. It's like they're time-tested.
So we have a formal liturgy that we follow every week. Even though we kind of have an informal feel to it, we have a structured order of service liturgy that we follow every week. We try to be in the midst of that very relational, you know, and as we say at the beginning, liturgy means the work of the people. So for us, what we do on Sunday is very much this collective of people coming together to participate together. And so the sermon sits in the midst of that, but we really much feel like it sits alongside. We have a long, you know, break for a greeting time so we can be relational. We have our prayers. We have prayers of the people, which is an open sharing of prayers time. We take Eucharist every week. We, of course, we sing. So I very much feel like it's the longest thing we do, but I don't even know that I would say that preaching for us is the central thing that we do. But it's very present, but I would say it would be our primary engagement with the text. So mm-hmm. I have a teaching bent, but I think the goal of when I preach, you know, and what I hope happens in the sermons in our church is it exists somewhere between an element of proclamation and an element of formation, you know, that we take this ancient story, this ancient narrative. Even though I know these questions are coming, I am making this answer up right now.
You had all the time in the world.
That we take this ancient narrative and understanding that it is the story that we live in continuation of. And so always being able to, even if there's a teaching element to it, always being able to take this story and engage it to our modern context mm-hmm. and proclaim, like, this is who we are. We continue this story. We are this place. Like last Sunday, we talked about transfiguration. And as N.T. Wright says, it is the joining of, you know, through the transfiguration is this reminder that Jesus is this joining of heaven and earth. And so talking about that. But then the formation element being, so how are we continuing to be formed towards that so that we can live into this calling, you know, of who we are to be. So
I'm curious to know if the church context that you grew up, that you've experienced in the past, is that the same place that preaching had in those churches?
That's not on the sheet.
No, that's, yeah. Yeah. So you have an excuse not to know the answer to this one.
I grew up in a tradition called the Christian Church, which isn't as common here in Texas. When I say Church of Christ, people nod in recognition.
Right.
The Christian Church comes from some of the same roots, a little bit probably more moderate typically than the Church of Christ would be seen. But the churches, I'm not even going to speak to my childhood and what the preaching was like. I remember it, kind of. I remember the preacher. But, you know, the churches I've been in prior to this, you know, I would say we're heavy on teaching and a lot of practical application, mm-hmm, you know, sure. Pretty didactic. So helpful, you know, good stuff. Mm-hmm. I would say in those, even though Lord's Supper, Eucharist was served every week, in a lot of ways it felt like for those the sermon was a central thing and heavy on the didactic, like,
yeah,
what will you personally get out of this that you can take? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So how do you determine what text you preach on? Do you guys do the lectionary, or how do you decide that?
Yeah. We follow the lectionary, especially in the seasons. So as we went in, you know, we're sitting right now winding down Epiphany. So we go right into the lectionary in Advent through Christmas, you know, through early Epiphany. We've just taken a break from it, and then as we move into Lent and Easter, we will go back to it. So typically during ordinary time, we engage with where we feel like our congregation has needs. Mm-hmm. And then during the seasons, the particular seasons, we'll join in with the church around the world, typically, and follow the lectionary. There's a couple of reasons for that. One of them is we've actually found that the lectionary is a really useful time for inviting other people from our congregation to preach. Mm. And so, because we already know that there's a structure to it, there's a guideline that we can invite them into, and there's an overall theme that's not necessarily being developed for a single series. So that's right. Been a helpful thing for us to be able to do that. So as we move into Lent, I will actually scale back on my preaching a little bit. I've just finished preaching 4 weeks in a row, but we've got some other voices. The other times, we typically will either do a series that's related to what we perceive is relevant to a need in our congregation of who we are trying to become. I just use the word relevant in a way that doesn't match up with what relevant normally means, I should say that. Or we'll do just an exegetical series. So like last year in the summer season, we worked through Ephesians. You know, it's such a foundational letter for a church. So it was very timely for us as we were still establishing ourselves. And then and we invited a lot of voices into that. That's when we had probably 2, 3, 4 others from our congregation preach in the midst of that. And then in the fall, we had a more focused, we did a series that was more topical called Sacred Time about how do we, but it was really worldview forming. You know, it was like, how do we understand how we are present all the time with God and God's work? And then this year we are taking, like we just finished Sabbath. Coming up later in May, we're going to talk about hospitality. And then in September, we're going to talk about vocation, because those are our practices. Like, what kind of people do we want to be when we are not gathered? And so we're in the midst of an intensive season of reflecting together on Sabbath. And so we introduced that. And then in the summer, you know, the other chunk of ordinary time, we will do Sermon on the Mount. Again, in this early season of the church, we feel like that's some core foundational teaching, you know, that we can get, but with a bent on understanding who we are. Who are we as the people of God in North Austin, North Central Austin? So
how far out do you typically plan your sermons?
I would say we go chunks at a time, maybe 4 months or so. I happen to know more this year just because we are being intentional about working through our practices throughout the year and seeing how they fit. But I don't know, you know, those. So there will be a chunk like in October, November before Advent, after we finish talking about vocation, that's not planned yet. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know we're going to work through Sermon on the Mount this summer, but that's not all broken down yet, of course.
So, yeah.
So typically up to half a year at a time is how it's been for us.
And so what exactly do you have planned out? So like for 4 months from now, February, March, April, May, June. So like now, what do you have planned for? Like, you have sermon notes for that Sunday?
No.
You have basic ideas of what's going to be spoken about.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to spend, we just finished Sabbath, you know, and we spent 3 weeks on that. But I was collecting notes for that, knowing that was coming. And now I'm collecting notes for hospitality and vocation. But it wasn't really until a couple of weeks before that the breakdown of how all that should fit would come together. So, yeah, I mean, on the calendar right now, it's lectionary, you know, Lent week one, week two, week three, and who's preaching. And then they will engage with what text they will preach out of the lectionary texts.
Right.
And then once we get beyond that, you know, through Easter, then once we get into hospitality, you know, our next practice, communal practice, I'll do all three of those. And mm-hmm. So I'm just collecting things, but the breakdown for that will come as that gets closer and I start to see. Yeah.
Yeah. So how far out does that start when you actually start working on the actual sermon?
I'm already starting. Yeah, but
by collecting the notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm such a nerd. I'm a total with no apologies. So yeah, I mean, I've got a little app on my phone called Drafts. Uh-huh. And I set it up so that I can you just open it up and you start typing. A couple others have talked about Drafts before on the podcast, but you open it up and you just start typing, and then it saves all these things that you type. And then sometime you can sit down and process, and you can say what you need to do with those, you know, make this a task in my task program or send this to Evernote.
So yeah.
I have Drafts set up that I've got this file in Dropbox called Hospitality Series. And if something comes to mind, something came to my mind not long ago. I'm trying to remember what, it doesn't matter. But if I see something or something comes to mind, then I'll just tap it in real quick and say, throw this in the hospitality file, so that later I come and I've just got. A good example was I saw a guy named Wes Moore, uh-huh. who uh, he he's well known because he published a book a few years ago called The Other Wes Moore, which is kind of his story about how he came out of this barrio in Baltimore and another kid a couple blocks over came out. So all that to say, I saw an interview with him about it, this new book where it's I think it's kind of memoir based, but it's him just talking about discovering what his life's work was. So I pulled out my phone right there. He was on The Daily Show. I pulled out my phone right there. I tapped in Wes Moore book. I can't even remember the title of it right now, but I know it's there and I know it's tucked away. So that when I start looking at that more, I'll get the reminder about it.
What's the difference? And we're going to talk about go in more depth with the tools that you use later, but what's the difference between drafts and using just Evernote?
I don't use Evernote for sermon stuff. And I think that's because there's a couple reasons for that some of them get really nerdy, but the main reason is because I have so much other stuff in Evernote that I like Evernote just to be a place where there's all sorts of things. But when I'm saving stuff, I just get a more focused concentration on these particular elements or ideas by looking at this text file that I created in Dropbox. It just gives me, we'll get into that.
Okay.
Sure. When we get into individual ones, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in the beginning, you're collecting notes from, random thoughts you have or things you see, that could pertain to that future sermon that you're going to preach. As you get closer, what's that process look like to continue preparing?
Yeah. So it depends a little bit on if it's going to be a series like that where we're engaging more with a theme or if it's a series where we're dealing more with a text. So
those, and you do both.
We do. And so those are examples of, when a theme is coming, those are the ones that are actually easier to think about far in advance. When a textual series is coming, that's not quite as easy. Although, this morning I finished the last chapter of Simply Good News by N.T. Wright, and the last chapter is about the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
So I fired up and made a note because I've already got a Sermon on the Mount. And I don't even know if I'll preach on the Lord's Prayer, that'll be me that week. But just so I've got it tucked away, last chapter of Simply Good News about the Lord's Prayer. The next time I'm preaching will be lectionary. It'll be the second week of Lent. So that process ends up being different because I start really particularly with the text. So for me, it's just been, for the last few weeks, I've been reading over all the lectionary texts. I'm not going to try to name them, even though I just read them a couple hours ago. But reading over all the lectionary texts for the second week of Lent, just to see which one has the most movement, for me, and perceived for where we come from. And so actually just this morning I determined I'm going to preach on Psalm 22 for the second week of Lent. So my next step with that will be, I will sit down in this case, and typically I try to do this at least a couple weeks before, but I'll sit down and just look at the text and just start just hammering out a bunch of questions, somewhat kind of as ignorant as I can be, which, this was the start of Bible study as I learned it in my Bible college undergrad, which was, ask questions of the text. So I'll typically do that in my favorite coffee shop, which I see you in from time to time.
That's right.
I like to just sit in that context to do that because I like what questions would all these people around me have about the text? And sometimes I'm successful at that, sometimes not, but it's a lot of people I know, come in and out of there. So I try to think through what would people who might just be sitting, in our congregation on a Sunday, what questions would they ask? So I just start with.
And so that's the first thing immediately after you pick the text. That's the first thing you do.
Yeah. Because I just want to have I just want to approach the text with a little bit fresh eyes. So like Psalm 22, I couldn't have told you really what that engages. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of texts, you say Acts 17, I already, that's where, Paul's in Athens, all that. So I want to try to approach it like I'm reading it fresh and new and don't really have a sense of what's going on. Cause I know that might be true for a lot of people. So that stirs things. And I don't necessarily do much with those questions. I might reflect back on them later sometimes if there's time, just to say, have I really engaged with some of the questions that came up for me, or more importantly, might come up for people? But really, that's just to get me present.
It's not like those questions are never directly dealt with on the day that you're preaching.
Sometimes if a question just hangs and persists in the process, but mostly it's just to get me
part of the process
even more, you know, leaned into it.
And
then the next step from there, ideally this will happen a couple weeks before. Sometimes this might happen on like Monday or Tuesday morning, but that's when I'll move into what commentaries do I have. I have Logos Bible software. I love Logos because because I am on the go. My office is our bedroom, which is as is your office.
Right. And or I said, a coffee shop.
Right. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. So like, I don't really do much sermon prep there.
I gotcha. All the your literal commentaries are in your bedroom.
Well, no, they're in this little bag. They're on my iPad. You know?
Gotcha.
That's why I love the whole Bible software gig, because I can go anywhere and work through and read through. I have a couple steps of engaging with reference work. You know, there's the commentaries that I have in there. Mm-hmm. And I do have a few commentaries at home on my shelf, but more often than not, I'll figure out, all right, let's just get this in Logos so I don't have to cart this book around.
Right.
And then I try as much as I can, you know, Logos lets me cross-reference. Uh-huh. Where else is Psalm 22 mentioned in all of these books that I have?
So let me ask you about Logos, because I love it as well. I'm not preaching on a regular basis, so I don't utilize it fully like you probably do.
Yeah.
I get so overwhelmed with the stuff that's available there. When you first started using Logos, did you just say, okay, here are the commentaries I've used in the past that I like, and here's the ones that I'll choose to utilize within Logos?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, you know, I bought like the silver package that has a whole bunch of resources that I don't use. So there's a way to say, you know, just kind of disengage these from my library.
Yeah.
You can do that in preferences. Yeah. And then I've just added other texts and commentaries and stuff along the way. So typically I'll start with, they just have a simple passage guide, an exegetical guide, which are kind of the default when I type in the text, it'll give me a list of the commentaries I have that engage with this text. The exegetical guide, you know, breaks down really more of like the word study kind of stuff. So I'll work through those two guides, and that was really helpful. So those tools, and then the third tool that I use a lot is there's a search called Bible Intersect, where I can't tell you the terminology for it off the top of my head, but we'll put it in the show notes. But you type in like Bible Intersect, you know, Psalm 22. Is that what I said I'm preaching on? I've already forgotten.
You did say Psalm 22, yes.
And it'll just go through and find any cross-reference in my whole library of where that's used. So if I have, like I have Church Dogmatics in there by Karl Barth, you know, mm-hmm. Barth mentions it, I can see how Barth talks about it if it's in another commentary from another section of scripture. So I'll just kind of flip through those. Like I have all of the N.T. Wright, New Testament and the People of God, Jesus. Mm-hmm. I want to see which when I preached on Transfiguration, I was really shocked how little there is on the Transfiguration.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. So all that to say, so between working through the commentaries and then doing this Bible Intersect, you know, I start to pull out a lot of things that trigger thoughts too that I'll store away. So when I'm doing that, I'll just have another note where I'm, you know, capturing my notes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Another program up on your computer.
Yeah, I mean, I almost build. I use an app called Ulysses, which is a fantastic writing app, and it lets you break sections down into. So all of the ideas that I'd been collecting become one little note file, and then I'll almost build my own commentary. You know, as I read through these different commentaries, verse one, you know, Brueggemann says this. Verse two writes so. And again, that's just continuing to form. Because what I want to do at the end of all that is really figure out what is the movement of this text, like when it was happening then, and try to figure out how that will be a movement of the text for us now.
Yeah. So the context of which it was written and what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the next step?
That's the next step.
What's next?
From there, it all gets kind of loose.
kind of free form after that.
Well, I should say, like, I don't follow a rigid structure in terms of how I do it, and I don't follow a rigid structure in terms of how I actually structured the sermon outline.
Okay.
But I would say it's deliberate. Mm-hmm. So it's loose just by nature of being bivocational and all that. But I would say typically the next step from there is going to be just start to look at, like, what are all of these ideas? What are all these themes? And so the way I do that, I guess there is a next step. So the way I do all that is I take all of these ideas, and I can take all of this list of ideas that have come together, and this is why I use a simple text thing, because I can save them into a mind node, like a mind map format. Mm-hmm. So then it just opens it up, and it's just got a list of all of these, and I can sit there with my iPad and start seeing common themes or ideas that seem to go together, and so I'll drag them together. This seems like this is a core tension, mm-hmm. you know, that I've thought of, that the text addresses and exists in our culture. And so as I start to drag all these pieces, that's how a structure often kind of emerges for me, which is like the tension of how this text speaks to our contemporary reality, an unfolding of the text, and, you know, how we're going to see what this migration of the text is and where it's moving us from and to. And then ultimately, you know, often there's some kind of, then what does this mean for us in light of this tension that exists? Mm-hmm. So I don't always name them that. I think that's a general flow I tend to come up with, but it really comes out just as I'm dragging pieces around. That's my favorite part.
Really?
I love that day. I don't know, because I think I just love
it. It's all coming together.
Maybe because it's so, yeah, maybe it's just because it's like,
all the dots are connecting.
What's this? Or I have no idea what this one even means, because I typed it in my phone 3 weeks ago at a stoplight. Get rid of
it. What does bird internet mean?
Right. But I really like that process of seeing how some of those pieces are coming together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all the one tricky thing about that is my little self-built commentary is in a different file. So even as I'm doing that, I'll flip over and go, oh, what are some of these ideas that I need to cut and paste in here, mm-hmm. from the movement of the text? But yeah, that part's fun.
Yeah, it seems like it. And so is that you're, you know, putting all those ideas together, is that what forms your sermon notes that you use? Mm-hmm. I guess the first question would be, do you use sermon notes? Because I know that that's not a given for everyone.
Yeah, no. I certainly don't manuscript.
Yeah. But,
so yeah, those from that mind map, then I can open that in a file, like in an outlining app. And I use two different ones. One I use more in the prep stage, and then one I use in the actual, when I'm preaching. I preach off my iPad, but then I'll open them. There's this format called OPML, which people have talked about on the podcast before, but it's just for moving outlines between different apps. And so I'll take the OPML out of my node and put it into this Mac app called Tree.
Okay.
And the thing I really like about Tree is it creates you can see this. Nobody else can see what I'm doing right now, but I'm making a horizontal gesture.
Yes, with this hand.
Because it creates like a horizontal outline. So primary point, and then the subpoints are in the next column over. And so you can open and close these. So it's a really helpful way for me to visualize rather than a completely vertical
linear
outline.
Yeah.
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 So I'll work my way, you know, I'll take those notes and then refine them, because coming out of the mind mapping software, they're still a little bit scattered, you know, or they're not fleshed out. You know, it might just say, talk about X here or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that's where I will also like paste in if there's quotes I'm using. Golly, that's a whole nother part I didn't talk about. We'll come back to
the quotes.
But that's where I'll paste in like the full text or quotes I'm going to use. And then when I save that, then I can open it in Omni Outliner, which is an app I use. And that's what I'll use on my iPad. And I like using an outlining app because I can just tap and expand a whole section or close it. So when I'm preaching on Sunday, I can kind of hone in. Ideally, I just want to have four or five things that are words or phrases that help me remember what my movements are.
Right, yeah.
But certainly it's helpful to be able to open that up and see, oh yeah, these are the two places I was going to go with that.
Gotcha. You know? A little more detailed explanation of what right. that means.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The other thing I don't use this as much as I think I will. I've just collected over the years so many notes from reading books that I've either typed in from paper books or that I've cut and pasted out of ebooks and put in this database. I use an app. I've used many apps for this. This is an app ideally that would be for Evernote, but again, I don't use Evernote for this because Evernote just becomes everything else.
Like, yeah.
Evernote really feels more like it's connected to church administration stuff or my bivocational okay. life, you know? So yeah. I want to be someplace different.
Separate. Yeah.
So I use an app called Together, which you can just drag just about any file on there and then search it. And Together's good. The main thing I like about it is it syncs so I can search on my iPhone or iPad if I'm in sure. a situation where I only have those.
Yeah.
But like all my school papers are in there. I mean, I just have tons of stuff in there. So if I am talking about, say, Transfiguration, you know, a couple Sundays ago, to be able to do a search and see anywhere that I found notes from that. The funny thing is, though, I often kind of skip that step. What I end up doing in there most often is not necessarily searching, you know, and just reviewing everything I have, but I might remember, like when we did our Sabbath series, I remembered Eugene Peterson had some great stuff to say about Sabbath in the pastor. So I would go in there and do a search for Sabbath and find a couple of his quotes or something like that. So, but I have a lot of things that I've tucked away and saved in there that are helpful. But it's mostly seems like it's more like a ready access for things mm-hmm. that come to mind that I already remember, and not so much like this grand. My goal is it's amazing reference library of things I've engaged with before.
Yeah,
it doesn't always end up being the case. So
it may take time to build that up.
Yeah, and I think part of it's the time spent going through it too.
Yeah,
there's a lot in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, is that the end of the process?
Yeah. So most of that, it's really not until, like, the dragging things around might happen on Thursday.
Okay.
And then it's really not until Saturday that I'll really put all of those pieces formally into the outline. And mm-hmm. So I feel like so much of my sermon happens in my head, for yeah. better or for worse. But yeah. like when I'm thinking it through, it is what I'm thinking about in the shower often these days. So yeah, I mean, that's when I start to put it together on Saturday, and that feels right to me. Like, it doesn't feel rushed or doesn't feel panicked.
Yeah.
Most of the time it feels like what I have by Thursday, if something crazy happened on Saturday, you know, and I needed to,
you could make it happen on Sunday.
Yeah. I feel like I could, but Saturday is really where I feel like it gels, and I'll go sit in, just a Barnes and Noble or a coffee shop. I like Barnes and Noble on Saturdays because I feel smarter. I feel smarter.
There's books all
There's
around.
There's books around. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then day of, the morning of, do you look over your notes in the morning? You do that thing, you memorize it, then forget it, and then
I have three kids.
Right. So your time is spent doing nothing but getting three kids to church.
It feels like it.
Yeah. Yes. Like everybody else who has three kids.
Well, I mean, it's a challenge. So all of my kids have different food allergies, and we almost always go out to eat on Sundays with our congregation. And so we almost always bring.
You're packing lunches.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing often, you know, just in the midst of all that. So usually I'll get up and, like, when I'm laying in bed, I'll still be thinking through it a little bit, and I might tweak something. I often feel like the final, you know, where this is, what the final calling or conclusion is often what feels most resolved to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times as I'm laying in bed, that'll come to mind. Or even as I'm, my poor kids, like, even as I'm making bacon, you know, I might be like, hey, I'm sorry, kiddos. I'm still trying to think through this a little bit, and they kind of know that.
Yeah.
So maybe then when I'll sit down, you know, a couple minutes before we leave and type that in.
Yeah.
Or even once we get, you know, and we're finishing setup and all that, I'll take a couple minutes. But
sure.
Mostly by by Saturday night, I really want to, and honestly, mostly by like Saturday midday, mm-hmm. I want to feel like I have a good sense of where this is going to go.
Yeah.
And that's what, I guess that's why I like the iPad instead of sure. printed notes, is because it's so easy to make yeah. changes on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you describe your style?
Jeans and a hoodie. It's pretty common for me.
That's pretty solid. I mean, that's kind of your uniform. I'm trying to think of the times I've seen you not in those things.
I don't wear a hoodie on Sundays. No, like I said, I think I have probably a pretty conversational style. Mm-hmm. Man, one of the things I've been challenged with is because I do know people from Mustard Seed, you know, and we are a pretty relational church. I've been thinking in the back of my mind how it's easier for me to go preach, like, you know, we have a mutual friend, Gideon, who's been on the podcast, and, you know, I preach at Vox pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's easier for me to go to that church and almost have like this more directive prophetic bent to there sure. than
proclamation.
So that's one of the things I've been challenged by, is thinking through. But so all that to say, stylistically comes across, I think, pretty relational, conversational. Mm-hmm. Golly, I don't know. I don't know how I would say it beyond that.
Where do you, well, and I can say, you know, when I think of you preaching, I think of you usually sitting on a stool.
Sure.
And yeah, like you said, pretty conversational. I'm curious where you think that came from. Because I find that my preaching style did not happen in a vacuum.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've certainly listened to my fair share of Rob Bell.
Yeah.
And so I think I've always appreciated the, even in a really large context, there's a certain element of conversational that mm-hmm. comes across in him. I mean, but I also did youth ministry for 11 or 12 years. And so some of it, I think it just came out of that.
Sure.
That was the format, you know, so I certainly mix in a fair amount of humor. Sometimes, seldom is it planned. So sometimes it goes really well.
Some accidental
humor. And sometimes after the fact, I go, oh, that was not, that I shouldn't have done that. I do that less now than I used to, but yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of it is, there is a process of finding your voice. And I don't feel like it was until my last few years in youth ministry that I really found what my style and what my voice yeah. is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I suppose that's even changing, but
sure.
So I would say even listening to Rob Bell, I listened to a lot of Andy Stanley too in those days. So listening to other people and I think trying out things mm-hmm. and then finding my own in the midst of it, I would say it formed a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So much so that when you ask me, what's your style? That's not on the, well, first of all, like, that's not on the sheet.
I know, I'm off topic.
And second of all, Leslie Newbegin said, trying to describe your own culture is like a fish trying to describe water.
That's what I was say. It's the water we swim in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Okay. So I don't know any other tools or resources that you haven't mentioned already, but if there are any, what are they?
Yeah. So, I mean, I talked about Bible software. I talked about how I use Ulysses for writing. And that, I actually sync that through Dropbox with an iPad app called Editorial, which feels... Ulysses for iPad is coming out, and I'm looking forward to it. But in the meantime...
Oh, they don't have it for iPad.
No. But since everything just exists in these simple text files in Dropbox,
yeah,
it's just there for gotcha. Me. For now. Until Ulysses for iPad comes out. You know, I would say... I would suppose what I haven't talked about are some of the key... Like, I really love the IVP Bible Background Commentary Series. They just give quick overviews of what might be going on culturally in a text, and I really appreciate it. I think they're well done, especially the New Testament one I like a lot.
And you access that within Logos?
Yep. Yeah. That comes up in my commentary list. I use the Jewish New Testament Commentary. I don't honestly appreciate it as much, but I think it's helpful to get an alternate perspective. Like, I use the Africa Bible Commentary that somebody previously on the podcast mentioned because I want another perspective. Although I don't often feel like the Africa Bible Commentary is another perspective. I feel like it's a imported you know, from the missionaries in the in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But there's still, you're going to get some
sure
alternative perspective through that that's helpful. And then on, you know, most of the time, commentary wise, I almost always, I really like the NIV application commentary series just because they do get kind of practical mm-hmm. in a way that I'm not bent towards. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing for me to ground it. I really like the New International commentaries of the Old Testament and New Testament, Nicott and Nicant.
Oh, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I'll end up in those often as well. Or a lot of times I'll just, you know, try to find something by somebody that I appreciate and respect mm-hmm. already. You know, if I find that Brueggemann wrote a commentary, you know, in another series, like he's written some in the interpretation series, so I'll go get those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's those. And like I said, because of this, you know, I'll almost always see what N.T. Wright had to say. I'll be able to find, although Scott McKnight's books aren't cross-referenced quite as much, so they don't pop up, even sure. though I've saved several of them in Logos. Yeah. A lot of N.T. Wright comes out. Moltmann, yeah. when I can. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Okay. So, tools, software, books. Anything else, resource-wise? You mentioned drafts at the beginning.
I did mention drafts. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What else? I talked about the outlining apps, MindNode mm-hmm. Tree, and Omni Outliner.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to all you listening to this. I jump in and out of way too many things. and so one of the things I've discovered listening and or hosting this podcast and sometimes listening is I've been really surprised how not technical so many people's workflows are.
Sure.
And here I exist on the other side of it, you know, throwing yeah. out probably overwhelming anybody, but yeah, I mean, I try to figure out how are these tools, how can I make the most of these tools?
So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm imagining like someone like my dad was listening to this. He'd probably think like you're from the future.
I've tried no doubt. I've probably, you know, tried to keep it simple and just confused everybody too much.
You should
it makes so much sense to me.
I'm sure you should make, I mean, this is for real. You should make a, I don't know if tutorial is the right word, but make a video of yeah. your, of you just doing your outline and using those tools. That'd be fascinating. I'd pay good money for that.
I've thought about it.
I'm curious. It seems like with all the interviews that you've done with other pastors about their process, it seems like very often you probably get at least just one gem of something that's like amazing that you've picked up along the way.
Yeah. Nope.
No,
no, I'm just kidding.
No one can top my process.
So a couple things that stand out to me. So I think we've done like 41.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And I was actually, so some of this came out, I was interviewed on the Productive Pastor podcast a few months ago and he asked a similar question, but a couple things stand out. One of them is I was really challenged by how many people talk about how well, how much prep they do just through prayer and sitting with the text. And,
yeah.
and candidly, it was, I've gotten way more of that from the women who I've interviewed.
Oh, fascinating.
Man, I think they do a better job of just being present with the text. So that's been challenging to me.
Yeah.
And that, so that, I still don't do that well, but that certainly comes out in the just keep reading over the text when I'm doing lectionary based to see where is this going to go. So that's been something that I've realized I've kind of needed to work back in. I learned that early on, you know. A couple others that have, you know, that I just think back really stand out to me. One of them wasn't too long ago when I interviewed, I mentioned Wade Hodges. I didn't mention Wade Hodges, but when I interviewed Wade Hodges a couple months ago, he talked about how he's very deliberate about working on four sermons at a time. And that Monday he does a step that's 4 weeks out.
Oh my gosh.
For that Tuesday he does.
That is systematic.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tuesday he does a step that's 3 weeks out. But what he talked about the benefit of that was, like, he will realize well ahead of time, especially if he's in a series, oh, this piece that I was thinking about for this week will go better next week.
Wow. Okay.
And so being able to try to juggle a few at a time has, especially like when I was doing that Sabbath series, mm-hmm. there were pieces where I thought this was going to be week one, but as I was starting to come together, I realized it's week three and I already had enough going on for that, that I was able to just move it, you know,
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So, but that was really helpful for me to be able to see a bigger, not just like a thesis for an upcoming, but already starting to have some idea of a structure,
right?
Especially in the midst of a series, I think was helpful. Those two were huge. I've certainly picked up, you know, book resources, like I mentioned, like Africa Bible Commentary came from somebody else. I assume there's refinements that I don't even recognize which conversations they came from. Early on, I found myself wanting to, I started the podcast about the same time we started a weekly liturgy. So preaching certainly wasn't foreign to me at that point. I'd done my fair share of it, but that's the first time I'd settled into a rhythm of teaching every week, really for a number of years, you know, since my youth ministry days.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, you know, I had a process already that I felt like worked, but I also found myself, you know, almost getting confused by listening to these.
Oh, sure.
This is an anti-promo for the podcast, but almost getting confused listening to, oh, they do this, they do this.
A million different directions for you to go in.
But I've just started to realize that there's little nuances that people do that I go, oh, that's good. That's helpful that I've kind of worked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Well, what else do you want to share with us?
I don't know that there would be anything else. Yeah, the only thing I would say is I love, part of what motivated me to start Sermonsmith is I just love the creative process and the idea of just working through something over and over and over. And, you know, that's, I think that's what motivated me to do this, is just settling down into good rhythms of gathering the ideas and the information and the study and all that just as preparation. I did a blog series for the V3 movement, which is a church planning movement out of Virginia connected to the Baptist General Association of Virginia. But I did a blog series for them, and I've linked some of these from the Sermonsmith website just about, I called it, because this, I think this is what they wanted me to call it, but I called it basically like sermon prep for the missional pastor. The idea that when you're in a small mission focused church, you're doing a lot and you're on the go, and how do you do? So that kind of captured some of that, but just the work of just continual, like I really think of sermon prep as a way of life. And so rather than me just chunking out 16 hours throughout the week, more of a, how can I be present with our congregation and these texts that we're studying and working my way through that continually, just cycling and cycling around. So it's fun for me because I love doing this podcast because I get to hear other people do the same thing. And it's what I'm trying to do too.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks for letting me sit in your chair and take over the throne for a little bit. It's been pretty fun. And
pretty fun. I'm having a great time.
The time of my life.
But no, thank you. So I mentioned this in the intro, or I will, but I've actually had a couple people like reach out to me and say, hey, why don't you share yours? And so then it's, you know, and I thought, man, I don't want to just sit down and talk, but then I thought, well, here's my friend Shane, who we can cross-pollinate podcasts. I just did that last episode with another podcast, and here we are doing it again. So thank you, because I knew you would do a good job with this. And
well, it's an honor. It's an honor. And yeah, definitely. I mean, I've wanted to hear from you on this. And so not only because I like your preaching, but because you've sat down for 40 episodes now and listened to other people and gleaned from what they have. And I think that there's probably a lot of people who really wanted to hear this.
So as we wrap up, let's hear your take on what is Seminary Dropout, because I think it's a great podcast other people might want to listen to.
Well, thank you. So Seminary Dropout is, you know, the tagline that I've used in the past is it's somewhere in between like seminary level Greek and Hebrew homework and youth camp trust falls. It's somewhere in between those two. And really what that's kind of evolved to is that, I really think that good theology should be for everyone. And so the basis of the podcast is the interview format podcast. I sit and talk with Christian, authors, leaders, thinkers, even some musicians from time to time. And basically, it's very narcissistic. I just ask them questions that I want to know the answer to. And so, yeah, it's been really fun. We are, I think we're knocking on the door of 80 episodes now. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a blast. I mean, just I cannot believe the people that I've gotten to talk to and yeah, spend an hour with. So.
And I mean, I guess it might come out about the same, and it'll probably come out after this, but you've got an interview even coming up with N.T. Wright, which
I think
I'm going to sneak in here and just sit here and listen when you do that one.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, where do you even go from here after you interview N.T. Wright?
Right.
Yeah. I think C.S. Lewis is not answering my emails, so I don't know where to go. I get real morbid.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very excited about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's why it made sense to invite you. A, because I like what you do, and I thought it'd be a chance for people to hear about what you do. And I've listened enough. I haven't listened to all of them, I'm sorry to say.
Shame.
I can't keep up. I can't. And I'm sure you haven't listened to all of mine, and that's okay. I just know you ask good questions, and I know you engage well. So I thought it'd be fun to do this. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Anytime.
Well, blessings.
Thanks, John.